Satirist Harry Shearer is in Philadelphia to participate in the Shadow Convention, which is presenting discussions on issues likely to be glossed over at the Republican and Democratic conventions. Shearer is the moderator of the Shadow Convention's Rapid Response Team, a panel of satirists, journalists, and pundits. Last night, in front of an audience at a Philadelphia theater, they watched a broadcast of the Republican National Convention while supplying a play-by-play analysis of it. Harry Shearer is also an actor and does the voices of several characters on The Simpsons. His program, Le Show, is heard on public radio stations around the country. What's been your reaction to the diversity theme throughout the week at the convention?
Nice try. Nice try. We call what we're doing is the Shadow Convention, but what the Republicans are putting on is the real Shadow Convention, because it has a very little resemblance to the actual party. The actual party is what's going on away from the cameras, the Tom DeLay hospitality car, liquor swilling, cigar smoking, lobbyist entertaining, real convention. And what they're putting on television is a real shadow of that.
What did you think when Jim Colby of Arizona, who's the only openly gay member of Congress who's a Republican, spoke about trade, not homosexuality, but about trade, and several members of the Texas delegation took their hats off and bowed their heads in prayer in opposition to homosexuality?
Well, I'd say that's a remarkably brief, honest moment breaking out in a convention where the honesty has been rigorously policed.
J.C. Watts as Republican conference chair.
Mm-hmm.
Any reaction?
They're trying hard. And I don't want to be, because I will be out of the country when the Democrats are on, I don't want to be mistaken as deriding the Republicans and giving the Democrats some slack, because the Democratic convention, unless I'm seriously mistaken, will be equally mendacious and equally puffy and equally without substance and equally without an accurate representation of what's really going on. Both parties, I believe, have decided that what the American public really doesn't like is politics, and they are dedicated to giving us politics-free political conventions. The American public responds by watching these things in fewer and fewer numbers and voting in fewer and fewer numbers. So there seems to be a referendum going on politics-free politics, and the politicians seem to be either losing or, depending on what you think their real goal is, winning.
George W. Bush has been putting across this compassionate conservative message, and I wonder why you think that that's the image now that George W. Bush wants to put forward, and how that's going over
one word,
American public.
One word: women. They've decided that the battleground for this election is women, and that women didn't like the Pat Buchanan, Pat Robertson image of the Republican Party, and so they reconfigured the image of the party to be gal pleasing. It's like, to use a word common in daytime television, a makeover.
W is for women.
Yeah, W stands for women, a wonderfully triple entendre slogan. It may mean he stands up when they come into the room. It may mean he puts up with them. It may mean that he advocates their issues. Who knows?
Have you noticed that none of the senators or congressmen who were really big during the impeachment proceedings are being featured at the podium?
I put out a call the other night on MSNBC for them to find the managers. Find the House managers, please. Would you please? Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. The actual Republican Party has been removed from this program. Trent Lott was relegated to a noontime speech. You know, Trent Lott is arguably the most powerful Republican currently in office. You can at least make a case for that. In any previous political convention, by virtue of his office, he would have been accorded a prime speaking slot. Relegation, his happy relegation, he's totally cheerful about it when asked, his happy relegation to a non-covered slot is emblematic of what they're doing. They're covering up the real Republican Party, a party of white men.
If you're just joining us, my guest is satirist Harry Shearer. Have you heard George W. Bush speak much extemporaneously?
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to more of it. Well, because he has his daddy's talent for cuisinarting the English language in new and refreshing ways. There is a site at slate.com called Bushisms, and it gives you some sense of what we're in store for if he wins, or even if he doesn't. And he has, it's a Bush family gene. They're on nodding acquaintance with the syntax of the English language, but it's an uneasy acquaintance.
As a satirist, you do the voices of a lot of political mm-hmm. leaders. How close is George W.'s to George Bush's?
Well, you're hitting a very painful nerve right now, because I did George W. on my last program, and then listening back, I'm saying to myself, the critic in my head is saying, "You're still doing George. You don't have George W. yet." There's a George Pear is a little more of a baritone. George Fee is more of a whiny alto. Also, there's a sibilance thing that the son has that the father doesn't. He's got a SH sound for S's that his dad doesn't quite have. And there's a way that he punches words, George W. punches words, you know. He also doesn't repeat things in the kind of daffy way that his dad did. And George W. will use the first person personal pronoun, something that you may remember his dad avoided like the plague. Getting up in the morning, looking forward to solving the country's problems, dealing with Saddam Hussein. He was taught by his mom never to use that first person pronoun, and he never did. George W. doesn't have that problem.
There were a lot of protests around Philadelphia yeah. yesterday, and I'm wondering, I think one of them was near your hotel. I don't know whether you were outside for any of it or saw some of it on TV, but were you surprised by any of your own reaction to either the protests or to the police reaction to the protests?
Well, I came, as you said, from Los Angeles, and we're expecting this, if not more so, for our convention. I say our convention, the one that's going to be staged in Los Angeles. I come at it from this point of view. I'm very grateful to Ariana and whoever else conceived of the Shadow Convention for reimagining the theatrics of dissent. I am sick unto death of people trying to recapitulate the mechanics and the theatrics of the 1960s in terms of dissent and protest. You can make an argument that those tactics were chosen then or erupted then or evolved then because the issues then were bodies were really on the line in the Vietnam War, in the freedom rides, in the civil rights struggle of the South. Human bodies were on the line, and so confrontational tactics, I think, were understandable, if not the only conceivable choice. But in this day and age, to tie up rush hour traffic and just tick off hundreds and thousands of motorists to make a point which, you know, I watched the television coverage, the point didn't get across. Whatever they were protesting about was not covered. What was covered was the tactics of the police, the tactics of the protesters. Okay, they're moving up Walnut Street. We think they're moving over to, you know, that's the coverage they get. They got plenty of it, but only one correspondent that I heard in 2 hours of television coverage actually read one banner that was being carried by a protester. So it does not succeed in communicating, which one would think would be the chief goal of protest. And like a lot of strikes in the bad old days, it ticks off the innocent bystanders to no good purpose.
Harry, you've flown out to Philadelphia to participate in the Shadow Convention that's mm-hmm. being held here. And the convention, the Democratic Convention, will be coming to your hometown in Los Angeles. Will you be doing anything there?
My body will be in Edinburgh, Scotland. I'll be appearing at the Edinburgh Festival with the rest of the Simpsons cast.
Oh.
We'll be doing a live performance of the Simpsons in Edinburgh and then two in London. But I'm going to leave behind a little piece that on video that I hope will be part of the Shadow Convention, which is something I did at a one-man show in San Francisco earlier this year. It's a silent debate among the presidential candidates, which I have a lot of videotape of these guys just sitting in front of a television camera not saying anything. I can't tell you how I get it. And there is something that happens to you when you see people who you normally see on television just with their jaws flapping, suddenly being quiet but sitting there. And I hope that that's revealing of something to the crowd at the Shadow Convention in L.A.
How's your Al Gore coming?
Oh, my Al Gore is well in shape, of course. I've been doing him for basically the entire length of the Clinton administration. So I don't want to show it off here now. You were sort of suggesting that I do so?
Well, I was going to kind of push hard. But let me ask you,
Terry, that I look forward to the proceedings in Los Angeles. I think we're going to make a show of unity and progress and relevance for the 21st century that is sadly lacking in my Republican brethren.
What are the things you hit on for Gore, for his voice?
A certain calculation. I think his voice carries the same sense that everything, every move is pre-calculated, a certain lack of spontaneity, a certain weirdness in the sibilances, which I don't understand, and then that trace of Tennessee that I think he calculates to expose at moments when he wants to seem, you know, like one of us.
Had you been working up your McCain when he
Yes,
was
I was. Yes, I was working up my John McCain. I had the good fortune to meet one of his kids, and so I got to see the McCain mouth without and I'm doing this for you physically, so I better find words to describe it, or it doesn't really work on radio. But there's a muscular constriction that he applies to his mouth muscles, and you only realize it when you see one of his children who has the same mouth, obviously, but unrestrained by that tension. And I don't know whether that's from his days as a prisoner or from his days in the Senate.
You're kind of wrapping your lips around your teeth.
Yes, I'm wrapping them tightly around my teeth, and John McCain does that, and then all of a sudden you see one of his kids and they don't do that, and you go, I get it.
My guest is actor and satirist Harry Shearer. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is satirist Harry Shearer. He's in Philadelphia to participate in the Shadow Convention's Rapid Response Team, a panel of satirists, journalists, and pundits who are doing play-by-play commentary on the Republican Convention. Arianna Huffington, who used to be very conservative and would be on a lot of political satire shows going up against a comic like Al Franken, you know, he being
the liberal,
more liberal, she being more conservative. And now she's heading up the Shadow Convention here in Philadelphia and later in L.A., which is standing in counterpoint to both conventions and saying, let's talk about the issues and not just put on a TV spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
But she seems to have undergone something of a political conversion. And I was wondering if you think that's from hanging around with a lot of more liberal comics and satirists.
I do know this. When I hung around with her at the last Republican convention in San Diego, because we'd already become friends somewhat through appearing on Politically Incorrect together, I did say to her, you know, your friend Bill Bennett, I've described as the most dangerous man in America because of his role in advocating mandatory minimums during his reign as drug czar. So the effect of which has been that a lot of violent criminals have had to be freed early to make jail space for the nonviolent pot smokers who are doing 10 hard years, and he doesn't seem to take responsibility for the effects of his actions, even though he believes, if you read the Book of Virtues, or the introduction of the Book of Virtues, he believes in taking responsibility, but he doesn't seem to be doing it in this case. And I was saying, you know, you should read up on this. And now, 4 years later, she is having as one of the major issues not dealt with by either of the two parties at her Shadow Convention, the abject failure of the drug war. So, you know, I don't want to take credit necessarily, but I think that Arianna is rare in the opinionating business for being somebody who, though she gets paid to have an opinion, is willing to change her mind, is open to reading new information, and is willing to let it penetrate. And I think she gets a lot of flack for that as a result, you know. People are always saying to me, this is a phony conversion, as if somebody can make a lot of money by going left in this country. if left is where she went. I don't know.
I feel like I would be remiss in my responsibilities as a hard-hitting interviewer if I didn't ask you your impressions of hairdos and fashions at the Republican convention.
Well, you know, that's the one thing they haven't been able to change is the amount of hairspray that's used at a Republican convention. They haven't backed off on that at all. One thing that really stood out to all of us last night who were on the panel was the unanimity of choice of the Republican women on the podium. The dress color, the message dress color seemed to be sort of aqua, in the aqua pale green league. That was the color range that everybody chose, Condi Rice and Elizabeth Dole, and I forget a couple of others. But that seemed to be a very distinct message that they were sending. It's a soothing, reassuring color. Nobody wore bright, Nancy Reagan red.
Not even Nancy Reagan.
Not even Nancy Reagan. Nobody wore what I used to think of as, you know, Liddy Dole blue. It was very calm, pastel. I think, you know, the color choice was right along lines with the general soothing, reassuring style and message of the entire convention.
This is an interesting theory. Even Laura Bush, who appeared on video last night, was wearing a pale
That's
green.
That's right. That was the color of the night.
Are you working on your Laura Bush?
Oh, God, it's a little early for that. I haven't even worked on my tipper yet. So the first ladies will take a while. I'll wait till either of them gets elected to really start working on the first ladies, because it takes the campaign for their character and their role in the, you know, the way they're going to be used to start coming front and center. And it's not just the voice, it's the way they're used that, you know, speaks to me about how I want to use them back.
Anything you're noticing yet about either Tipper Gore or Laura Bush?
Tipper seems to be, they seem to be hiding Tipper a lot. She was a lightning rod for controversy a few years back, and I think that they're still a little afraid of using her for fear that that might come to the fore. Laura is obviously being used a lot, and I think she's there to say, you know, whatever the Democrats may say about my husband's youth, I wouldn't have married him if he was still that kind of guy. I think that's the message. Because, you know, you have to feel that she's a down-to-earth, you know, reasonably serious woman. I married a librarian, you know. I think that the underlying message is he couldn't have done whatever you've heard the rumors that he might have heard that he's doing, because I wouldn't have married him if he was that guy.
Harry Shearer, thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure, Terry, as always.
Satirist Harry Shearer is in Philadelphia to moderate the Shadow Convention's Rapid Response Team, a panel of satirists, journalists, and pundits doing play-by-play commentary on the convention.